Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress,
to visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's Durafighter interior paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's Durafighter paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We're talking with defense attorney and host of Defense Diaries, Bob Mata, today. We're going to be talking about the Stephen Smith case, some of the questions that have arisen about the investigation into the case, and some of the, I don't know, almost red herrings that are in existence in this case that a lot of people are wanting to grasp onto and say, this right there, that points to this involvement of that person or this person. One of those big ones being Alec Murdaugh and Randy Murdaugh showing up at the scene of the crime the next day, going behind police tape, taking pictures, eventually being asked to leave. Bob, number one, is this normal? Is this something that is showing some sort of involvement in the crime itself? Is this ambulance chasing? What's your opinion?
No, I think it's 100% ambulance chasing. I don't think there's anything nefarious. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of the investigation yet to go in terms of what may have happened to Stephen Smith. I mean, that's yet to be determined. As far as Alec and Randy showing up, you know, basically, they have people either monitoring the scanners and or they have people in the sheriff's department that are like, hey, we've got an accident. You might want to swing by here. And then they get over there. And for Randy especially, you know, because we know for a fact that he contacted the Smiths and wanted to handle the case. You know, mm-hmm. He offered to handle the civil case for a wrongful death, and which are huge money cases, you know. And so they got out there. And then him being able to get to the scene and take photographs for a plaintiff's lawyer is huge, you know? So, I mean, it's a huge advantage, you know, and that was kind of like, it all goes to that whole Murdaugh thing in the low country that they had a stranglehold on it, man. They had buddies in law enforcement who would allow them to do, you know, things that the normal folks can't get into, you know what I'm saying? So, and that's what, like, as much as people want to think it was something nefarious, mm-hmm. My gut's telling me no, at least as to those two guys, that they were just there on a money grab, you know, trying to pick that case up. And, you know, I think ultimately that's, at least initially, that's what happened.
I mean, ethically, I mean, not that, you know, ethics are synonymous with the Murdaughs, but is it an ethical thing to do to be an attorney, to go to a crime scene when you've not been retained by anyone and go and take a bunch of pictures and almost use that as like your pitch to the family who's grieving?
No, it's absolutely unethical. You know, there's a ton of rules of ethics against that. Like, you can't solicit cases like that. You know, that's why that term ambulance chaser kind of was born out of that. You know, you can't hire people to go out there and, you know, listen to the scanner and then run out and pass your card out. There's very strict rules with respect of how you can approach, either in criminal cases or civil cases, how potential clients, you know. It's like, typically it's something of, you can send a letter out, you know, just kind of a generic letter. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, if you ever get sued, you'll start getting a flood of letters in from attorneys because they are checking the dockets every day to see when cases happen. Uh-huh. Or in criminal cases, the same thing. They'll go and look at, you know, the arrest records for certain counties or cities And then, you know, people that are charged with crimes, they start getting, you know, tons and tons of letters from attorneys that are soliciting the business. But yeah, showing up at a scene like that, that's a big no-no.
I mean, are there consequences for something like this? I'm guessing it's not the first time that they've done this. If we were to look at other crime scenes that have taken place in that area and others were to recount who happened to be there, you'll probably see these two there at a lot of them. And with that being said, is this, I mean, I know it's unethical in most of the country, but yeah. Is it unethical there if this is kind of the norm of how things have been done?
I don't think it's the norm. I think because the way that there's always, and it's different in every state. Like in Illinois, it's called the ARDC, and that's the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Committee, and they oversee complaints, and they're the ones who monitor what lawyers are doing. And every state has some version of that, and every state has rules of ethics that lawyers have to follow. So what they do is if somebody makes a complaint or if something becomes public like this, that they're over there soliciting business at the crime scene or at the scene of the accident, you know, it's going to become an issue. And because of what's going on just in general with the Murdoch family, I would not be surprised whatever South Carolina's governing board of attorneys is, that there's going to be a complaint that Randy Murdoch is going to have to file. Now, Alec, obviously at this point, it's not going to matter much. He's been disbarred anyway, but that's what you worry about as an attorney. You worry about getting suspended because that's the board that has the power to make that happen, either disbarred or suspended, depending on what they think the severity of the violation is. So, you know, that's going to be an issue for Randy, I imagine. Like, I can't imagine that in the state, because it's not just the low country that we're talking about. Is it low country or low county?
Low country.
Right. So, you know, like we're talking about the whole state of South Carolina is what the rules of ethics apply to, not just the low country.
You know
what I mean? So, and that's just unethical because, you know, it is. It's like it's really what kind of gives, you know, especially personal injury lawyers a bad name is when, you know, they're over there just kind of like vulturing
accidents
and trying to, you know, prey upon victims and victims' families to try to get cases so they can make money. It's just, it's a bad look.
Is there going to be a closer examination of Randy Murdoch? I know nothing about Randy other than these little bits and pieces that we've heard of him, you know, doing this with Alec or this or that, and the involvement in the case of Alec. So I'm not here to speak ill or positive. I'm neutral. I don't know much about him or his practices, but the fact that he was so close to someone who was just an explosion of wrongdoing, and there has been some interactions. They're both in the same field. Does that automatically put a bit more of a microscope on him to see, you know, was this guy doing anything too, just because he was so close to the fire over here?
I mean, I think that part and parcel of what's going on in terms of everything being exposed, that I think all the Murdochs are, you know, at risk of everything that they've done, whether it be in their practices or what have you, is going to be scrutinized. You know, I mean, it's going to come with it, you know. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, because there were like after the Murdoch trial and when the Stephen Smith thing started coming into focus and people were saying, look, this needs to be looked at again. They got it wrong the first time. And then ultimately they ended up reopening the investigation and then determining that it was a homicide, you know, an intentional homicide, that, you know, everyone was like, let's look at Buster, you know. And even though there's no evidence out there that Buster was in any way, shape or form, you know, affiliated with what happened there, that's just going to be the natural instinct for people to want to look at them just because of what had gone on with Alex. Now, you know, whether or not anything's going to come out of it, we don't know. But what we do know is that they're certainly going to be looking at all the Murdochs, you know, just because they held so much sway and carried so much power down there for so long, man, we're talking 100 years. So, you know, those are all going to be things that are going to get looked at for certain. My gut's telling me that the Murdochs didn't have anything to do with it, but, you know, my gut could be completely wrong because I don't know any of the facts from the investigation. You know, ultimately what it's going to be in terms of the actual crime that took place, They're going to do the exact same thing that they did with Alec Murdoch, man. You know, I don't know what the level of, you know, cell tower coverage was down there, you know, 8-9 years ago. But, you know, because 4 years in the terms of technology is a long time.
Yeah.
And they're putting up towers all the time. But we know Stephen Smith was getting text messages from his boyfriend. So, you know, that's going to give a tower ping. So they're going to be able to put together a pretty strong timeline of where he was. And that's what I'm saying. The more towers there are, the better, in terms of kind of putting him in exact locations or pretty close to exact locations. You know, and we don't know what that was in 2015, but, you know, they're going to be able to kind of put him in certain places at certain times, and they're going to start looking at all the phone records. They're not going to be able to see exactly what was texted unless people have, you know, for whatever reason, on their phones from that many years ago, like what the text threads were.
They do have his phone. They have his device.
For sure.
They do.
So the question is whether or not he's kept texts from 8 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, but what they'll be able to see from the phone records is the numbers that were for the incoming and outgoing calls and locationally where he was. So it'll be interesting. I mean, they're going to really open it up because none of that was done initially, you know, which is a shame. Even though it was a hit and run, it still should have been investigated heavily, you know, but from a civil side, there's just not, for law enforcement, there's not that incentive ultimately. But hit and run is a crime as well. You know, I mean, it doesn't amount to murder, but it still is a crime that deserves to be investigated. And they really just doesn't seem like they did much back then. So they're really having to start at ground zero and work their way backwards from, like, kind of look and see what they did at the crime scene that day, and then work their way back from that, with, you know, in terms of if SLED is there, or whichever department or agency ended up handling that initially, you know, and they'll figure out what they did, all the gaping holes that took place in that investigation, and start trying to fill those holes in to try to flush this thing out.
Does this end up correcting any of the, you know, the good old boy BS that some of these departments, you know, basically operate by, when they get a microscope like this on them? Because I don't think anyone can trust them to independently investigate themselves on this when it seems that they purposely didn't investigate it for some reason. When someone does go in and if they can get any answers and it shows, oh yeah, well, this was dropped over here because this person said to drop it, even though the evidence points in a different direction. Do we ever get to see justice for the individuals that do that? Because that in itself, I mean, seems like a heinous crime of trying to divert or stop the prosecution of somebody who may be guilty or who may have at least some suspicions about them, and not even allowing themselves to go down that road as a favor to whoever, you know, made that clear to let's not investigate this further.
I agree, Tony. You know, and that does see, we can only hope that that's not the case because of the microscope. You know what I'm saying? Because I think as a general rule, you're right. I think that in terms of accountability, that, you know, if we find that there is some kind of like favoritism or favors being handed off because of who the Murdochs were, and, you know, certain officers are either looking the other way or they're sweeping things under the rug, they absolutely should be held accountable for that. And you know, we can only hope, because there's so many eyes on it, that something will be done about it, because you hit the nail right on the head. That's problematic.
This is more than a slap on the wrist. This is like you purposely, circumvented the law.
Obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
You know, by a cop, man. I mean, if that turns out to be the case, and look, if I'm in whatever agency was handling that, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, no, cops never want to have their work scrutinized like that, you know, because it's a tough gig. You know, sometimes corners are cut, you know, things are done where, you know, if it's exposed to the public, people would be like, wow, you know, I can't believe that went down like that. So, I mean, I am sure that there are some people that are extremely nervous about the fact that this thing is being opened up and it's going to be dug into pretty heavily. So, yeah, we'll see how it plays out, man, but it's going to be interesting, that's for certain.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Bob Mata, defense attorney, and he's got the podcast Defense Diaries. Highly recommend checking that out, defensediaries.com. We're going to talk more with Bob in just a few moments about some of the other cases that we're following and get his insight as well. Press subscribe so you don't miss that. And get an ad-free experience when you sign up and subscribe through Apple Podcasts. Even try it for 3 days free. Nice little perk there for you. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.